Let's continue our look at the book of Ecclesiastes by turning to chapter number 9 and get ready for verse number 11. This section of the book of Ecclesiastes has a lot of proverbs in it, some wisdom that's particularly focused on the idea about life and death and how it's out of our control, and so we need to kind of just go with the flow, make the most of it, under the wisdom that we have from God. Now, there is a philosophical belief in certain areas of Christianity and in certain times back into Judaism as well, that God decides everything, that He makes all the decisions and therefore causes things to happen. This is a fatalism that we're talking about here. Now, I do not believe that is upheld by Scripture, and I do not subscribe to it myself. And I think this next part of the book of Ecclesiastes kind of speaks to my belief that sometimes things are just random. God made us and made this world in a very specific, very good fashion. That's His own testimony from the book of Genesis. But then sin came into the world, and entropy was introduced. In the Scripture, it's referred to as the curse, where everything starts falling apart, sometimes more quickly than other times. And then you've got the multitude of people that are exercising what we would refer to as the free will that God gave to mankind. And I believe He really did. I think He gave everyone the ability to make choices, both good and bad. And when you've got a bunch of people making free will choices, both good and bad, that causes this complex web of interaction among the people. And that plays throughout all history. And so you've even got impacts in the current time that we live in, current areas that we all live in, that have echoed here from way back at the beginning of time itself. And so that's what I think contributes to this idea of randomness, so that even when we do our best, even when we make the best possible plans, every once in a while, we get this hiccup in reality that throws everything out of kilter. And so, Book of Ecclesiastes is aware of that. I think this is Hezekiah's writings, and in his research, in his observations, he noticed randomness. So let's read about that. Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 11. Again, I saw that under the sun, and that's his way of talking about in day-to-day life, because the sun comes up in the east, goes across the sky, sets in the west, and then it repeats the next morning, and that's just how time passes. So again, I saw that under the sun, or in day-to-day living, the race is not to the swift. Now, I would add one italicized word here to get the thrust of the meaning, and that is the race is not necessarily to the swift. It very often is. A person works out and has a trainer that helps them evaluate their style and things like that, and so they very often win the race because they have done everything in order to make sure that that happens. But it doesn't always happen that way. Sometimes the long shot wins. Maybe the favored person in the race trips over their own toe or a rock in the road or whatever. Maybe some sort of weird gust of wind blows one runner against another, and so the whole pack goes down in a great big tumble, and the person that was at the back that didn't get hit by all of that tumbling crosses the finish line first. That's random. That's just strangeness that sometimes happens in life. So the race is not necessarily to the swift, nor the battle to the strong. You know, usually the strongest, best prepared, best equipped army wins, but not always. Sometimes circumstances go otherwise. Nor bread to the wise. So you think about wise people as being the ones that have probably more successful lives. So they're able to get the food that they need, but not always. Nor riches to the intelligent. That doesn't always happen. Nor favor to those with knowledge. Sometimes people that don't know a thing get the favor of a situation. But time and chance happen to them all. So that's his way of saying randomness is a reality. Verse 12, for man does not know his time. We don't. None of us know when we're going to die. None of us therefore know how much time we have. None of us know for certain what we'll be doing in a few more minutes. We got a good plan in mind. We've got some thinking along those lines, but randomness might intrude. Other people's choices might throw us off base. Like fish that are taken in an evil net. And I've warned you before, watch out about this English word evil popping up. It's not always intended as a moral word. In this sense, it's just a nasty net, okay? A bad thing. So like fish that are taken in a nasty net, and like birds that are caught in a snare, so children of man are snared in an evil time when it suddenly falls upon them. So those fish might have been minding their own business, chasing other fish or some other food source, and then suddenly a net's on top of them and their day is ruined. Or the birds be flying along and suddenly they hit this invisible fine line of net and they end up on somebody's table. That's just the way it sometimes goes. All of us could be just going along, minding our own business, and then suddenly circumstances change. Verse 13, I have also seen this example of wisdom under the sun, and it seemed great to me. So he was talking about randomness, and then he wants to talk about maybe a specific example that he's seen. There was a little city with a few men in it, and a great king came against it and besieged it, building great siege works against it. So here's a little bitty town. It's got a wall. But apparently this nearby king decides he wants this city for himself. So he comes with his great big army, surrounds it, starts breaking down the walls. And it looks like everything is lost. Then this happens, verse 15. But there was found in it a poor, so he doesn't have any money, wise man. And he by his wisdom delivered the city. So just out of the blue, this poor guy comes up with a plan. This is how we can save ourselves. And it can work. And it does. Yet, no one remembered the poor man. So years and years later, nobody had a clue about who that guy was. I like to use this example. When I'm driving down a road that a lot of my other fellow church members have driven down for years and years and years and years, and it's named after somebody, I will sometimes ask them in a class, who is this person? I give them the name, and they go, I don't know. What did they do? I don't know. And of course, I've already looked it up to find out why the road was named after him or why the bridge was named after him. And I explained to him. And they go, well, I've lived here all my life. I didn't know that. Because you see, once we're dead, the new generations move on with their lives and very often they forget the past. And so that's what happened in this circumstance, the Ecclesiastes writer says. But it didn't matter. Verse 16, listen to this. But I say that wisdom is better than might. Though the poor man's wisdom is despised, that is, that it's been forgotten, and his words are not heard. So it was still a good thing that he came up with the wise plan. So wisdom is good even when it's forgotten over time by other people. So we need, according to the text here, to make the most of wisdom in our lives, regardless of how we think people will remember it later. Verse 17, the words of the wise heard in quiet are better than the shouting of a ruler among fools. Think about that for a moment. So you got a wise person trying to give quiet, calm advice. That's better than some guy that's got all the power screaming out orders and how he thinks things should be. Because wisdom is always better. Verse 18, wisdom is better than weapons of war, but one sinner destroys much good. Now think about that one again. One person who throws wisdom off and then starts forcing everybody to go along with his stuff can blow the whole situation up. We talk about this idea of one bad apple spoils the whole bunch, right? We need to watch out for unwise people trying to take control of the situation, especially if they've got a lot of bluster, if they've got a lot of power and authority, because they can screw up the lives of a lot of people with their foolishness. We need to convince people to stay with wisdom. And even if everybody else abandons it, we need to stick with the wisdom. Verse number 10. Some more Proverbs. Dead flies make the perfumer's ointment give off a stench. So perfumer's ointment is clearly perfumed. It's the idea it's supposed to smell good. But what happens if a whole bunch of dead flies get in there? Then it's going to lose its purpose, isn't it? And so a little folly outweighs wisdom and honor. It only takes a little bit of foolishness to screw up a lot of wisdom. It's just one of those things. It's like this. If I were to give you a nice, pure glass of spring water and say, this is great water. It's fresh and clean. And then I take a little eyedropper and say, but here's a little sewer water. I'm going to only put a little tiny drop in. Enjoy. I don't know anybody that's going to feel comfortable drinking that water anymore. It doesn't matter that the vast majority of it is nice and clean and pure. The moment I introduced something nasty, it ruined the whole thing. And that's what foolishness does. It comes in and it screws up a lot. Verse number 2, a wise man's heart inclines him to the right, but a fool's heart to the left. I don't know how far back it goes. It goes back much farther than the 8th century that we're looking at here, the 8th century BC. But this idea that the majority of the people in the world are born right-handed, that's just the way it works. There's nothing wrong with left-handedness. It's just the minority of the world are left-handed. So because of that, over time, right-handedness became associated with the idea of doing the right, In fact, that's the reason why that's kind of attached to it in our English language. So because of this, this proverb says, a wise person is always inclined to do the right thing, while a fool is inclined to do the wrong thing. Verse 3, even when the fool walks on the road, he lacks sense, and he says to everyone that he's a fool. This is a visual play on words that you can kind of tell some of these people are out of kilter with reality by just the way they walk. They're kind of full of themselves, and they aren't paying attention. They're not situationally aware. And so we are not inclined, I think, to really want to be involved in somebody's life like that or have them involved in our life. Verse 4, if the anger of the ruler rises against you, do not lose your place or leave your place. That is, don't give up your argument. For calmness will lay great offenses to rest. When we know scripturally we're in the right, should not back off of it. We can be kindly disposed toward the person that we're debating with, especially if they're a person of authority, like here it's a ruler. But when you're in the right, you need to stick to your guns. And perhaps over time, you will win the debate with the other person. I hate seeing Christians suddenly give up positions of biblical truth just because they're being criticized by people in authority. You've got to stick to your guns, folks. Verse number 5. There is an evil that I've seen under the sun, as it were an error proceeding from a ruler. Folly is set in many high places, and the rich sit in a low place. And I've seen slaves on horses and princes walking on the ground like slaves. So this is a topsy-turvy situation that he's talking about here. And there's some assumptions made. That the rich person is wise in this case, while the foolish person is the one that's getting all the attention. And the wise rich person is getting sidelined. The slave here is somebody that apparently owes a whole bunch of money, and yet he somehow managed to get a hold of a horse and ride it as if he's in charge, while the princes, the ones who don't owe the money, they're having to walk around on their own 2 feet. And it's, again, some of the randomness that happens from time to time in life, that you can't necessarily look at a person's situation and know whether they're in the right or in the wrong from that position. This speaks to the New Testament, where the Pharisees seem to have labored under the impression that if you were wealthy, that was proof that God was blessing you. And if you were poor or sick, that was proof that you were under God's curse. And of course, we know that that is not necessarily true. It's possible that that might be the truth in a circumstance, a situation, but not always be guaranteed. We have to consider all the aspects of the situation. So don't prejudge people based on their circumstances. Verse 8, he who digs a pit will fall into it, and a serpent will bite him who breaks through a wall. These are examples of situations in life where things can suddenly go bad. So here's a person, he's trying to dig a pit for whatever purpose. Maybe he's going to store things in it. And he loses his footing, and down he falls into the very pit he dug. That's not a good situation. Or here you've got a person who's trying to demo a wall. He's trying to take a wall down, probably so that he can rebuild something else. And he breaks into a cavity where a serpent is, and it jumps out and bites him. So he was just trying to do work, and he ends up snake bit. That's sometimes the way that life works. He who quarries stones is hurt by them, and he who splits logs is endangered by them. And that's true. I mean, if you work in a stone quarry, you got to pay attention to your job because it's a dangerous job. And same thing with working with logs, especially back when you were doing everything by hand. I remember being a kid still. I mean, I'm talking about 10, 11, and my grandfather and my uncle taking me out to cut wood to burn during the winter. And we were out there splitting logs. And you got to be careful. And when you're using chainsaws, you got to be careful because you could end up, even though you're trying to do something good, end up hurting yourself or someone else. Then we have a little bit of advice that's kind of given in the middle of this. If the iron is blunt and one does not sharpen the edge, he must use more strength, but wisdom helps one to succeed. Tools need to be properly maintained to be effective at their peak. I cut trees sometimes with my chainsaw, and I have to stop from time to time and get my little file out and sharpen up all the teeth on the chain. And I have to tighten the chain from time to time to make sure that it cuts, because otherwise I'm going to have to put more and more pressure in pushing on the cut in order to cut that. And they were talking about axes. If you've ever tried to cut something with a dull edge, you know you have to push harder. Well, there's a solution to that, folks. Take a time and sharpen. And so wisdom is kind of like that. Wisdom is where we take time and think things out, because we are much more likely to get a good outcome if we think before we act. Verse 11, if a serpent bites before it's charmed, there's no advantage to the charmer. They actually did the whole charming of serpents way back at this time. And I'm sure they did the cheats that modern day serpent charmers do, where they milk the serpent ahead of time, or they actually remove the poison glands to make sure that it can't hurt you. But you see, in the performance art that this is supposed to be, if the serpent bites the person that's supposedly charming it, the whole show has been ruined. And that's the point. It didn't do you any good if you lost the plot of the purpose of the action. So it's, again, more advice. Think before you engage in things. Make sure that you're trying to get things done in the best, most efficient way. Verse 12, the words of a wise man's mouth win him favor, but the lips of a fool consume him. So wise people can sometimes get good support from their wisdom, while foolish people, people who just pop off, will sometimes cause themselves trouble. Not always, but this is kind of general practice that we're talking about here. Verse 13, the beginning of the words of his mouth is foolishness, and the end of his talk is evil madness. If you haven't figured it out by now, the wisdom literature is not very happy with fools. Verse 14, a fool multiplies words, though no man knows what is to be, and who can tell him what will be after him. So sometimes foolish people make all sorts of proclamations about this is going to happen, and this is the way it's going to work, and this is what I'm going to do, and they act as if they're in control of the future. And the truth is, they're not. No one is in control of the future. Book of James. I think James must have been reading from the wisdom literature quite a bit. He points out that we should not be saying, I'm going to go to this city and I'm going to work there so long and I'm going to make a big profit. Instead, James writes, You ought to say, if the Lord wills, I will do this or I will do that. That's the wise approach to the future. Verse 15, the toil of a fool wearies him, for he does not know the way to the city. Hard work is tough on foolish people because they're looking to shortcut things because, you know, they're all about them and not others. Verse 16, woe to you, O land, when your child is a king and your princes feast in the morning. Some of the horrible things that happened throughout history is that kingdoms were left with only a young child of the line. And then they expected that child to make good choices when they didn't have any life experience. That's not good. And woe to a group where the princes, the people that are supposed to be running the nation, they're busy getting drunk in the morning, getting full of food in the morning. Verse 17, happy are you, O land, when your son, your king is the son of the nobility and your princes feast at the proper times for strength and not for drunkenness. So you're better off when you've got somebody that's been raised and prepared to be in leadership and that those that are in leadership are not just partying down all the time. Sure, they enjoy themselves at appropriate times, but the rest of the time, they're applying themselves to leadership. Through sloth, the roof sinks in. Through indolence, the house leaks. Yeah, things fall apart if we don't attend to them. Bread is made for laughter. Wine gladdens life. And money answers everything. That's a tongue-in-cheek sort of thing there at the end. Money isn't, of course, the answer to everything, but sometimes it feels like that. Even in your thought, do not curse the king, nor in your bedroom curse the rich, for a bird of the air will carry your voice, or some winged creature tell the matter. So be careful what you say, because you never know who it might get back to.